Hello there. Today is Tuesday, August 2nd. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, the fallout over Donald Trump's latest controversy continues.
Where in the God's earth is written that you can kill an innocent person and say this is being done in the name of Islam? This is not.
Another billionaire throwing support behind Hillary Clinton. A warning about the Zika virus in one Florida community. And also ahead, coloring books. Well, they're not just for kids anymore. It's all on today's International Edition. Welcome to the program. The feud between Donald Trump and a Muslim American family who spoke out against him at the Democratic National Convention continues. Trump responded by attacking Kaiser and Ghazalish Khan, whose son served in the U.S. Army and was killed in Iraq in 2004. Arizona Senator John McCain, a prisoner of war in Vietnam, and other Republican lawmakers have strongly denounced Trump's comments. The Khans endorsed Hillary Clinton and have continued to speak out against Trump in television interviews, including at Voice of America headquarters in Washington on Monday, where Kaiser Khan was asked how his son's death might open a broader discussion on extremism.
His passing sheds light on the capacity of human being to be beyond us and them. He was responsible for lots of human beings, let's call them human beings. Inside, there were hundreds of soldiers. Outside, there were approximately 300 Muslim Iraqis, locals that were coming into the camp. When the terrorists came, he extended his hand. He ordered his men to hit the ground. He had the option to hit the ground himself. 300 Iraqis were at the gate. The gate was the target, and the wall on the other side was the target. He took 10 steps towards the oncoming danger, oncoming terrorists, with extended hand trying to stop it, fully realizing the consequences. As a military, trained military officer, he knew what the danger was. Otherwise, he would have not ordered the men to hit the ground. That is the message of Islam. That is the message of peace. Looking after others, not killing them, not killing innocent children.
Well, Khan suggested that by taking unpopular positions, Trump is damaging the Republican Party itself. President Obama, meanwhile, a strong Hillary Clinton supporter, spoke to a disabled veterans group Monday, and while he didn't mention Trump by name, his message seemed clear.
Because I understood that our Gold Star families have made a sacrifice that most of us cannot even begin to imagine. They represent the very best of our country. They continue to inspire us every day, every moment. They serve as a powerful reminder of the true strength of America.
Campaigning in Ohio on Monday, Trump didn't mention the controversy, but he did seem to take notice of a new poll showing Hillary Clinton ahead by 9 points.
We're also going to stop radical Islamic terrorism. We're not letting the people come in. We're not letting them come in. And they can play all the games they want, but we're not. You know, Hillary Clinton wants a 550% increase from Syria coming into this country over Obama. And you'd actually say, what is she doing?
Meanwhile, billionaire investor Warren Buffett says he'll do whatever it takes to defeat Trump, including escorting people to the polls himself. Campaigning with Clinton in Nebraska on Monday, Buffett savaged Trump's business record, questioned its bankruptcies, and asked why the Republican presidential candidate won't release his tax returns. And he even offered him a deal.
I would be delighted to meet him any place, any time between now and election. I'll bring my tax return. He can bring his tax return. Nobody's going to arrest us. It is not. There are no rules against showing your tax returns. And just let people ask us questions about the items that are on there.
Well, Nebraska is one of two states that assign some electoral votes based on the results with congressional districts. And while the state is Republican overall, President Obama won a vote here in 2008 in the more liberal district where Clinton appeared on Monday. Well, the Trump-Con feud is not just dominating the airwaves, it's dominating social media. Let's check in now with our social media expert, G. Abby Lee. G., what's the latest on Donald Trump's comments about Mrs. Con?
Hi, Lori. The trending hashtag on Monday was hashtag Can You Hear Us Now. Muslim women around the world used the hashtag to protest Trump's comment that Ghazala Khan was maybe not allowed to speak at the DNC last week. It started out with the Council on American Islamic Relations asking women to use the hashtag. During the weekend, Trump insinuated the mother of a slain soldier wasn't allowed to speak at the convention while standing next to her husband.
Well, it seems like it's a play on words from Khan's op-ed in the Washington Post. Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the tweets using the hashtag.
Sure. Many renowned Muslim women use the hashtag, and here is one example from Dalia Mogahit, whose handle is at dmogahit. She tweeted, "Muslim women not allowed to speak? I gave a TED Talks and got a standing ovation." The Muslim scholar actually spoke about the negative perceptions of her faith in the media and asked the audience to choose empathy over prejudice. A medical doctor named Allah Murabit tweeted, "Hey D, I spend my time creating solutions with presidents and the like, in brackets, so I guess we will never meet. Hashtag can you hear us now." She also attached a picture of herself standing next to former President Jimmy Carter.
Wow. And of course, we want to hear from both sides of the story. Mm-hmm. What's Donald Trump saying about all of this on social media?
He sent out a couple of tweets about Mr. Khan, and here's one. "This story is not about Mr. Khan, who is all over the place doing interviews, but rather radical Islamic terrorism and the U.S. Get smart." Trump also argued CNN, which featured its interview with the Gold Star father quite prominently over the weekend, will lose all credibility if they continue to be the press shop for his rival Hillary Clinton. Lori, another trending story online is that August 1st marks 72 years since Anne Frank wrote her last entry in her now-famous diary. Some people are commenting online that the anniversary reminded them to read it again and found her diary to be really thought-provoking in today's world. That's all for me today. Lori?
All right. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we're following on VOAnews.com. A Russian military helicopter downed in Syria kills five. Continued concerns about media freedom after a failed coup in Turkey. A refugee soccer team grows in the American desert. Australia is moving up in the world, literally. J.K. Rowling hopes Harry Potter play goes viral. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com or on our mobile app. This is International Edition. VOA's International Edition continues. The U.S. military has begun conducting airstrikes against the Islamic State group in Libya at the request of the UN-backed government. The strikes mark the start of a more intense American role in the fight against Islamic State in Libya. Pentagon Press Secretary Peter Cook said President Obama authorized the strikes following a recommendation from Defense Secretary Ash Carter and General Joseph Dunford, chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
They felt that there were specific capabilities we could bring to bear that they were limited in terms of their military capabilities being able to conduct. And one of the things that we're able to do is to conduct precision airstrikes in an urban area like this, reducing the risk of civilian casualties.
Well, meanwhile, last week, FBI Director James Comey warned that coalition forces defeating ISIS in the Middle East could mean surviving fighters will fan out toward Western Europe and the United States. Comey's warning also said it could mean larger scale attacks on the West, and he called ISIS the greatest threat to the physical safety of Americans today. We're joined now by Jamil Jaffer, adjunct professor of law and director of the Homeland and National Security Law Program at George Mason University. So thank you for being with us. What do you make of the director's comments?
You know, it's an interesting follow-on to what CIA Director Brennan said last month, you know, before the Senate Intelligence Committee about how the fight is going. And then you see, you know, ISIS here, you know, attacking a couple of energy facilities in Iraq. And obviously, you know, the last few weeks with the Nice attacks and the priest in Munich, you know, and then going back to Brussels and Paris. And then the Inspired attacks, as we've seen, you know, all around the world, but most prominently in Orlando and San Bernardino.
He did so much as say that ISIS fighters could spread to the U.S., Western Europe,
yeah,
if defeated in the Middle East. Are we doing anything to defeat them, or are we just pushing them to another location?
I think part of the problem is that we've taken a really long time to confront the threat of ISIS. You know, they took Mosul in 2014, almost 2 full years ago. They've had Raqqa and Deir ez-Zor for longer in Syria, and it's a real problem. It's not surprising that if we continue this sort of low-scale effort to sort of just, you know, take them piece by piece by piece, it's not surprising that they'll be able to expand their reach as they have already. And then expand outwards and scatter, as the FBI director suggested. It's definitely a concern. But that's a product of the kind of fight we're fighting against ISIS. You know, we're using a mostly air campaign, at least by coalition aircraft. And then we've got a small amount of American force on the ground, largely partner forces and not particularly capable forces, you know, rebel forces. And so it's not surprising that this fight is taking a very long time, and that if and when it slowly comes to an end and we start to achieve victory, that they'll scatter. This is not, you know, the president has supposedly described an effort to defeat and destroy ISIS, but this is a slow drip effort, and that's part of the problem.
Is there any way to defeat this terror organization, though?
Terror organizations themselves are very hard to defeat because by their very nature, they are diffuse and they can scatter. However, with a group like ISIS, which has centralized itself in one particular place, in the lands between Iraq and Syria, we do have an opportunity to take a very big shot at them and take out a significant amount of their fighters and, in particular, their command and control capabilities. You know, if you look at our effort against Al-Qaeda, part of why we've been so successful against Al-Qaeda is that we have given them no respite. We have continued a campaign of extremely heavy pressure on their leaders and on places where they have massed. And we've pushed them to the edges, and we've put them on the run. We've made them use insecure methods of communication, and we've targeted them very aggressively. Campaign against ISIS has been nowhere near as successful or as aggressive, and that's part of the problem. You know, you can't go after a terror group, particularly one that's in a fairly safe zone for them, and be surprised that they're being successful. You know, we haven't been aggressively after ISIS as aggressive as we could have been.
Do you think we are starting to shift that aggression, or do you think we're still falling short?
Oh, I think we're dramatically falling short. You know, I mean, I think that we have described a desire to defeat and destroy ISIS, but, you know, everyone keeps saying, well, it's going to take years and years and years. The truth is, if we really wanted to take ISIS out of Mosul tomorrow or take ISIS out of Raqqa and Deir ez-Zor tomorrow or the next month or 2 months, we could do that. We have chosen not to do that, in part because the leadership of the country and then the country as a whole is not prepared to commit the kind of effort it would take in terms of boots on the ground.
FBI Director James Comey also, when he was making the statement, it was actually at a cybersecurity conference that he made the statements, yeah, and he said also, you know, they are likely to commit more attacks like the recent ones we've seen in Brussels and Paris, partly because of the ease of travel could potentially make the U.S. more vulnerable to the threat.
Yeah, well, that's certainly true. Look, I mean, ISIS has recruited over the last 2 years, while they've been so successful in the lands of Iraq and Syria, they've been very successful also in recruiting foreigners, that is to say people from Europe and the United States, to come to that area and fight for them. Now, these people, battle-hardened, are returning to their home countries. They have Western passports, which means they can easily travel within Europe and to the United States, because a lot of the European countries are visa waiver countries. Doesn't mean we don't get any information about people coming from visa waiver countries, but certainly we get less. They don't have to go into an embassy to see somebody and get a stamp. And that's a real problem. And, you know, CIA Director John Brennan told the Senate Intelligence Committee last month that ISIL is training and attempting to deploy operatives for further attack. And they've got a large cadre of Western fighters. And so they're looking at refugee flows, smuggling routes, and legitimate methods of travel to get into the United States. And that's what Director Brennan warned against.
Think it's inevitable?
I hate to say it, but you know, the truth is that we are a very open country, and that's one of our huge benefits, but that also comes with, you know, risk. And you know, we've chosen not to, you know, change our visa waiver policies, in part because, you know, we want to be an open country. That makes us more vulnerable. Now, you know, look, we have successfully prevented a major Al-Qaeda attack in the United States, in part by taking the fight to Al-Qaeda overseas. And the truth is, that's part of what we really need to do with ISIS now. And while we've taken a limited fight to ISIS overseas, we're not really aggressively going after them. And what I really think is the need to double down on the effort against ISIS. That may mean putting more American boots on the ground. And I know that a lot of Americans aren't necessarily supportive of that today. And I know that certainly the administration isn't prepared to do that. And maybe even folks in Congress aren't prepared to do that. But that really is what is required if we're going to really defeat and destroy ISIS in the immediate future. You know, CIA Director Brennan also noted in his testimony before the Senate Intelligence Committee last month that, you know, despite all the progress we made against ISIS on the battlefield, you know, the U.S. efforts have not, quote, have not reduced the group's terrorism capability and global reach. I mean, that's a stunning statement for the CIA director to make. And so, you know, when the president talks about defeating and destroying, he's got his own CIA director there saying it's not working. And so we've got to change our strategy.
That's George Mason, University Professor of Law and Director of Homeland and National Security Program, Jamil Jaffer. Thanks so much. Well, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control is warning pregnant women not to travel to an area in the southeastern state of Florida where 10 new cases of Zika virus infections have been identified. State health officials believe the spread of the virus is limited to a square mile area just north of downtown Miami. Florida Governor Rick Scott gave residents an update on what's been done.
We're doing testing all across the state. We're doing testing of mosquitoes across the state. We're also testing individuals. We've tested now about 2,300 individuals around the state. In that one geographic area we've now tested about 200 individuals, and that's how we found the additional cases.
But with the total number of cases now at 14, Scott is asking for federal help to fight the spread of the virus.
We ask for the CDC emergency response team that will help with collection efforts, with lab, with mosquito control.
Well, in addition to the travel warning, the CDC said pregnant women in the Miami area should make every effort to avoid mosquito bites. Health officials are reminding the public that most people with Zika don't even know they're sick, but contracting the infection during pregnancy can cause infant birth defects. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
Democracy in action. That's what the U.S. presidential election is all about. Who's going to be the new president of the United States come November 8th? Tune in to VOA's coverage of the 2016 presidential election. Reports, expert analysis, and more. Professional, up-to-the-minute coverage that can't be found anywhere else. Right here on VOA.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
International Edition continues. Thousands of firefighters continue to battle a massive fire on the central coast in the state of California. The fire has destroyed at least 57 homes. Thousands more are still threatened as the blaze continues to grow. I spoke with CAL FIRE Chief Ken Pimlott for an update.
You know, the fire does continue to grow. And, you know, historically, fires in this area have been large. Terrain is difficult, the fuels, you know, the vegetation. There are little microclimates all the way from the coast, then literally just traveling a quarter to half a mile inland. Temperatures can change by 20 degrees and humidity drops significantly just, you know, getting away from that fog belt or marine layer. All of that changes the fire behavior drastically. You may think you're in a cool, moist environment right along Highway 1, and literally just 1,000 feet to the east, it's fires burning actively. So, you know, we've looked very carefully at the fire history throughout this area, and you know, going back to 1977, the Marble Cone Fire, all of them, you know, were tens of thousands of acres. And this one's proving to be very similar. It's just deep-seated in drainages, either aligned with the wind or just are difficult to access.
What do we know about homes that are at risk of being in the path of this fire or that have already, unfortunately, been destroyed?
2,000 structures are currently identified as being threatened.
Any idea how long this could go on? Is this just something that is too unpredictable at this point?
It is. Right now, weeks. We are, I believe, the attainment date are indicating, I believe, it's the end of August. You know, what we're looking at are not only has this been a historic, you know, area for large and damaging fires, that with the conditions we're facing with 5 years of drought, and you know, what we saw last year and the way the fires burned. We're not taking any chances on the potential for how this fire could burn. And it was really, you know, indicating that to us for several days. Just, again, firefighters were going in and they would work all night, and then fire would spot over past them. And it's just because it's just the fuel bed is so receptive. So we're not taking any chances. We are ensuring that firefighting resources are way out in front where the structures are, identifying the worst case scenarios, and ensuring that you know, evacuation plans are in place, you know, should the trigger need to get pulled.
And do you have crews from all over the state, or actually even the country, dealing with this?
We do, absolutely, from all over California, and then there are certainly fire engines from the city of Reno in Nevada, and then certainly federal crews are, you know, from other parts of the country are here. The damage inspection continues, and there's currently 68 total structures have been identified as destroyed. 57 of those are residential structures, and the other 11 are outbuildings. Yeah, with the warm temperatures and dry conditions that we've had in the last week, fire activity during the last several days is up significantly. We've had significant initial attack fire activity throughout California. In particular, we have one new large fire, and that's called the Goose Fire. It's in Fresno County. It is currently 1,000 acres and only 5% contained. Significant structure protection going on. Don't have an update on the number of structures threatened, but there are a significant number.
And you're just in the thick of fire season, and it's definitely getting worse before it gets better, it seems.
Absolutely. We are literally at the peak, and we will be here for, you know, obviously the next several months. And conditions are just tinder dry, and obviously the number of fires and the activity we're seeing is proving that out.
All right. Well, we appreciate the update. Thanks so much, CAL FIRE Chief Ken Pimlott. Well, there is such a thing as National Coloring Book Day, believe it or not, and it's held annually on August 2nd. It's become an increasingly popular celebration, along with the rise of adult coloring books, particularly here in the U.S., which have skyrocketed in popularity as more and more adults discover the joys of sitting down to color as a way to chill out. Faiza El-Masri reports on the new adult coloring book craze. Faith Lapidus narrates.
Trina Lucido creates coloring books, and her inspirations are all around her.
One day I saw a beautiful leaf, and boom, I did a whole page with leaves. So some came from sketchbooks, and some were just a one-word inspiration. Some I just saw something on the ground, and that was my inspiration that day.
Her latest is called Color, Write, and Create, a coloring journal. It contains 40 pages of hand-sketched drawings and lines to write on.
The idea behind this book, the big idea, was to encourage people to be creative. Something else that I've heard from people, that they're buying these for people who are either ill or going through a rough time, and they feel this is something that kind of will just sort of help them almost therapeutically.
Adult coloring books are big business. In December, 5 of the top 10 best-selling books in the U.S. were coloring books. Color, Write, and Create is the latest addition to Lucido's product line that started 20 years ago with handmade greeting cards.
It's a diary and a sketchbook all in one. It's called an art journal.
Over the years, she's created a variety of collectibles made of paper, fabric, and antique materials.
Everything you do has got sort of a vintagey flair to it.
Business and marketing expert Hillary Tattersall says adult coloring books are an important way for Lucido to grow her online business, Jubilee Flea, and hopefully move toward mass production.
So many of her products that I personally have sold and represented with Trina over the years have been one of a kinds. So it's one of a kind, one of a kind, one of a kind. So, I mean, to have commercial success, you need hundreds and hundreds, hopefully thousands and thousands and tens of thousands.
Lucido's adult coloring books are also available in local stores where grown-ups were more than happy to sit down and go to work.
It's very relaxing. Any stress just sort of falls away. It frees your mind. I love her little birds. There's just something about them that they make me smile. So I'm saving the bird pictures to the very end, I think.
For now, there is strong demand for adult coloring books, and that keeps Lucido happy and busy. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
I thought thought he was the man to lead us through the long night. But I was wrong.
Do you like games, little man?
You would spill blood in this holy place.
Well, HBO has confirmed what Game of Thrones fans never wanted to hear. The fantasy thriller phenomenon will be coming to an end after season 8. Recently, HBO renewed the series adapted from George R.R. Martin's novels for a shortened 7th season consisting of 7 episodes, while the 8th season will bring the saga to a close. The number of episodes for the last cycle not yet determined. Game won't be back with its 7th season until next summer, missing the deadline for the 2017 Emmy competition, which it routinely dominates. Last year, Game of Thrones scored a dozen Emmys. And those in the know, though, say a spinoff is always a possibility.
Show them what Lannisters are. What we do to our enemies.
Real war is between the living and the dead. And make no mistake.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition. We're glad you could join us. Find us anytime at voanews.com. You can follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. We appreciate your being here. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jonah Cummings. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Rights monitors report that an ailing Christian woman held in Iran's Evin prison for 3 years has been denied medical leave. Mariam Zargaran was arrested in 2012 and sentenced because of her Christian faith to 4 years in prison for supposed security-related crimes. She has been on a hunger strike for weeks, protesting the refusal of authorities to grant her medical treatment or leave. According to Iran's new Islamic penal code, prisoners can apply for conditional release after serving a third of their sentence. Ms. Zargaran is reportedly suffering from heart and hearing problems and other serious ailments and has complained of poor treatment from the prison's clinic. Both Amnesty International and the U.S. State Department have noted and condemned the practice by Iranian authorities of denying proper medical care to prisoners of conscience and other political prisoners. Both have also noted that the persecution of religious minorities in Iran continues unabated. Iran remains a country of particular concern under the International Religious Freedom Act in the U.S. Christians, Muslims who do not adhere to the government's official interpretation of Islam, Yarzanis, Jews, and most particularly Baha'is face discrimination, arbitrary arrest, imprisonment, and worse because of their faith. Despite President Hassan Rouhani's promise in 2013 that all ethnicities, all religions, even religious minorities, must feel justice. Iran has ratified the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and is a signatory to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, both of which guarantee freedom of thought, conscience, and religion. Secretary of State John Kerry has said that the basis of this critical freedom is respect.
And respect, in turn, demands legal equality. It demands that the practitioners of one faith understand that they have no right to coerce others into submission, conversion, or silence, or to literally take their lives because of their beliefs.
The United States, as President Barack Obama has said, remains committed to promoting religious freedom both at home and across the globe, and urges every country to recognize religious freedom as both a universal right and as a key to a stable, prosperous, and peaceful future.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is